What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Art of Storytelling Podcast. What's your story? Episode 7. I hope you guys had a fantastic second half of 2021. I know I said, and I always say, I'm going to get back to more consistent content with this podcast, but organically, it just comes out when it comes out, and lots of stuff has been happening, like my first book being released. January 15th, 2022, my birthday, to the boy who grew up, my first book, 15 poems, 15 photos, is going to be out. That's been taking up a lot of the second half of 2021, and I was fortunate enough to get it done, get it out there. By the time you guys are listening, this should be out and available for purchase on Amazon, and just thank you so much for the support. There's a print shop as well where you guys can buy the prints from the book. But the guest that I have on today is someone I, as of right now, as of recording, have only known for like 10 days. But they made such an impression on me that it was without question that I needed them on the podcast. So, with all that said, I hope you guys enjoy the story of Slam. They are a incredibly talented and thoughtful 24, like just recently turned 24. I have a whole decade on them. And just incredible artist, a beautiful soul, and someone that I think has an incredible story to tell, and I'm happy to share it with you guys, and I'm grateful that he shared it with us. Hope you guys enjoy. Without further ado, let's just get into it, man, because it's one hell of a story and one hell of a ride. I'll catch you guys on the other side. Peace. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Art of Storytelling, Tales by Law, and welcome back to the Art of Storytelling. It's been a long, long 2021. My last out, like, recording was June 2021. As always, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do more. And then I get distracted like a dog chasing a tennis ball. But we are back. We're in the second half of season 3, and I have someone here that left such an impression on me, I had to have him on the show. Welcome, one and all, to Slam.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, hello. Man. Hello. It's been, as of today, as of today's recording, I've only known Slam for 10 days, and it felt like so much longer.
Yeah, man. We can go by my real name. I'm Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah, no, dude, it's been like 10 days. This is like, this happens to me though. Like, I meet people, and just like, I don't know if it's my energy or it's just the kind of energy that like
around
the people
you?
That I, yeah, that like, or the, like, yeah, it's like, if it's like the energy that I attract or if it's my energy,
but combination of both,
maybe. But I tend to find like a lot of people where they're either very like immediately, like I'm just, oh, okay, cool, this person and I, like, this is, there's something, there's a connection here, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Same wavelength. Yeah, same wavelength.
And like I don't I don't know, man, maybe that's just like the harmony of the universe itself kind of thing or something. But I definitely like, I've come across a number of people in my life who it was just very immediately like, okay, no, we're gonna be really good friends, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. I cherish, like, that's not like to downplay like the fact that like you and I like had like met and just hit it off immediately.
Right.
Like that's, it's just like, I cherish every single person.
I've done it myself. Like I have a few friends that almost immediately I'm just like, are you my new best friend?
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who like, like this concept of best friend where people are like, you can only have like a few set best friends. I'm like,
no.
Like I have people who are like really close to me and like this, I know that they have my back and like, listen, that's all love.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude. And well, that's the thing too, is like, there's a Neil Hilborn quote. It's not used in like, this is a different context than the poem is written. And the poem is it's called Audiobook. And the audiobook is a book on how to ruin your own life. But there's a quote from it that I really enjoy. And it says, he says at one point, your heart is limitless. Your heart is a well that goes all the way down and you can fit everyone in there.
Love that.
And it's like, put into this context, it's a lot better. What he's saying is about how like it's a poem about, you know, ruining your own life. So the idea is that the context that's given in is that he's falling in love with a different woman at the same time that he's already committed to someone.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, that people will tell you that love cannot exist with in presence of other love, but they don't know you. Your heart is limitless. And then that goes into that quote. But like, it was that quote, like individually, that like stuck with me. And I'm like, nah, you know, like, dude, love is like a limitless thing. Like I'm a well that goes all the way down, dude.
I love that.
I would love everyone if I could.
Absolutely. I had a thing where, like, you know, just in this past year, I think too, where, you know, I announced like I have a book and I have like so much love pouring out and whatnot from like my friends and stuff. Like the support that like my friends and family have shown me is truly monumental. And like, I thank them all the time because I'm like, you guys have no idea how much you guys have kept me here. Like here.
That's a big one for me. That I really feel that very spiritually. I have a lot of people in my life, especially in my teenage years, you know, that I reminded constantly. I was like, you know, dude, like, you know, and I hope it, looking back on it, like, I hope it wasn't that toxic, like, I need you to be okay kind of thing.
Right.
But like, I tried very hard to make sure that like the people who were the most important to me, at least at that part of my life, knew it, you know, that like, dude, you know, like, my best friends, you know, like you said, like some people are like, oh, you can only have one, but like, no, I've got like at least like three or four. And that's just like my friends that are like my best friends that are like the ones I grew up with, you know? But like, I tried to make sure to tell them often, and I still do it from time to time now, of just saying to them, like, you know, hey, I, you know, you saved my life, you know? Yeah. And I'm lucky enough that I've been told that same thing from different people, man. You know, I don't know. Sorry, I feel like I'm cutting you off.
It's a beautiful thing. Like, listen, trust me, I love to hear it. It's a great way to like get this going, because it kind of like establishes why I even like thought to bring you on in the first place, is because you have like that kind of heart and that kind of energy, and you were like, I want to be a podcast. I want to be a guest of the show. And I was like, hell yeah. Like I'm 100,000% down for it. Cause the vibes were just right. You know, when you know, you know.
Yeah, man.
And finally, I'll do like a quick spiel again. It's been 10 days. So I've been playing Subnautica Below Zero on my stream. And we have what's called the guy in the chair, my boy Gus over from Sweden, who jumped in my stream, and you know, he found me, liked the vibes, and he stayed and he followed, and you know, he'll help me out to find things and whatever the case is. And I was like, cool, that's pretty cool. I should start doing that, because Twitch, as we know, isn't really good at like organic growth and like, you know, doing the advertising for like small creators and what have you. So I was like, all right, let me just go look out for people who are also playing, see how they're doing, and like see if they're having fun, you know, what their game style is like, the whole to do. And I came across Starstream, and like immediately the vibes were there. I was just like, oh, she's mad cool, blah blah blah, and third, and she's showing me stuff. I'm like, how are you only like a couple hours into the game, but you feel like you're like 2 days ahead of me in gameplay? Like, how are you getting? And she's just doing shit where I'm like, you shouldn't be there. That's death. She's, like, that's certifiable death on that side of the map. And she's like, I'm fine. It's no worries. I'm like,
Star. Yeah.
you know,
Star is pure chaos.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She is I love the shit out of her, dude. She's like one of, that's another good example of it. Like I said, you know, like I have like three or four best friends that are just like from like my real, like my IRL, like growing up alongside these people, you know, but Star is like, I've known Star for a few years now. But we weren't really close until about a year and a half ago. We were just talking about like Star and I were just talking about the timeline of this. You know, and her and I were like, she was one of the first people that I talked to about like the different levels of friendship that you get with people.
Yeah.
But no, like, especially for her stream and stuff, she's a very chaotic. She's like, if you had to make her into a D&D character, it's chaotic good. You know what I mean?
That tracks.
Yeah. And, but no, she's great. Actually, going off of that, I'm starting my own little tangent here, but, she and I were talking about this thing and she was like talking to me about like the different like levels of friendship that she has for people. And, it reminded me, when I was younger, I came up with this concept about like how to build relationships and like what relationship building really is. And I think especially because we're saying like about like how very new to each other you and I are, this is very fitting. The deal is like, dude, building friendships is like it's playing catch with pebbles. So what it is, for example, you and I, right? We are in our conversations and in getting to know each other and in talking about all the different, you know, philosophies and experiences that you and I have had. What we're doing is we're sitting there and it's like, we're like a little ways away from each other and we're sitting in a field, a little like gravel. And I find a little stone and I pick it up and I toss it over to you. Like we're playing catch. And what that stone is my name. My name's Ryan. You can call me Slam, you know, that's my nickname. You know, and then you catch it. You're like, oh shit. Okay. Here, let me find one that's the same size. I'm Law. And then as you get into conversation and as you start finding a little bit of bigger rocks, you know, and the rocks just grow and grow in size. And the sad thing is that not everyone's going to want to play catch with you at the level that you're ready to play catch, you know?
Also,
and
so scary to play catch with rocks because you're like always scared to either be hurt by the catch or be hurt or hurt the other person that you're throwing it to.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You're on exactly on that right track. That's what I'm getting to is like, because the deal is, dude, is like, you're not everyone's going to be ready to catch, you know, a stone that's the size of a fist.
Right.
You know, and like once you're getting up there and then that's the sad thing is that like sometimes you throw that rock, like building trust with someone and building a relationship with someone. And then all you get back is that little pebble that's just their name again, you know, and sometimes, you know, or sometimes you're just throwing like lightweight stones. And then the next thing you know, you're taking a boulder to the face. And you got to get up and you got to say like, okay, so will I toss a boulder back to them and show them that I understand? Or like, am I not ready to be throwing this heavy of a rock yet? Like, where do I go from here? You know, but that's what it is it's building that trust to be able to toss stones back and forth with someone. And, you know, someone asked me once, well, what happens when the rocks are too big to throw? I'm like, well, at that point, that rock is going to be big enough that the two of you can climb on it and just sit next to each other.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Love that.
Yeah, but like I love it too because you got it right away. You're like, oh yeah, because it's scary. Like you're throwing rocks at each other. It's like, yeah, but that's what it is because building a relationship is scary. Like, yeah, you can get hurt. You know, but it's like it's all about, you know, that's why you gradually go up in size is because you know you're building that trust, you're building that understanding of each other. You know,
I commend you for like that headspace and that viewpoint because I have a solid 10 years on you, like give or take a few days, a solid 10 years on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you wouldn't think it by how you speak and what you speak on. And I love that so much already about you. And it shows a certain level of like, yo, what's your story? No one gets there. No one gets to be this person at 24 without like a very elaborate story. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like the Guy Ritchie meets, you know, Guy Ritchie storytelling meets like fucking Tarantino, like, and then throw in a little bit of Nolan just because, you know what I mean?
Throw in a little bit of Nolan.
And then you, like, at the end, you just hit them with like the fast cuts of an Edgar Wright with the like soundtrack. And you're just like, God, you won. You're like,
you're slam already up too much right
no,
now.
No, I am absolutely not. I am like, man. Not.
Oh,
because I've done this too, like with Atlas, who was on episode one of this season. Mm-hmm. Me and him hit it off almost immediately, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. after I think it was right after the podcast, I was like, I had been sitting on last year or now 2 years ago, 2020. Where I was like, my mentor asked me to take on a mentee. And I was like, am I really ready for that? Like, I'm still doing so much with myself.
Yeah.
I didn't think I had the proper, mm-hmm. you know, I've been a teacher, I've been a swim teacher and all this, and, you know, arts teacher and whatever cases, but a mentor in that capacity, I've never considered because I felt like I was still being mentored.
Yeah, well, okay. So let me ask you this: like, mentor, what do you mean by mentor? We haven't talked about this before. What do you like? What is the what are you being mentored on? Like, what are you an apprentice of?
So with my first mentor, with Rich, he instantly became like my big brother when I worked at Fossil, and a lot of the mentoring came from just general life lessons. Like, a lot of it was. Me and him always said like we were on very parallel paths and either as he's got age on me. So either he would be at it at the same time I'm at it.
Sure.
Or vice versa. He's like, how did you get that at 20? What? I was like 22 at the time or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just getting it now. And we're in that like similar kind of like field. Or it'll be the complete opposite. He's like, you'll get there. I know you will because you're on the same like trajectory.
Yeah.
With Hutch, it was, you know, it was a lot of life lessons of someone going from their mid-20s to their early 30s. It was it was becoming an artist true and proper. Rich told me something years ago that always stuck with me. He said, you're an artist, act like it. And I was just like, fuck, like, what do you mean? Like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Well, like,
because I was a swim instructor, I was doing everything else but art. But a lot of people knew me for being a writer, for being, you know, doing spoken word and poetry, da da da. And then eventually I got into, you know, the Comic-Con world and, you know, doing photography and all these other things. And he was like, you're at it. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And he was like, it wasn't that you were never a good swim teacher. That just wasn't really your calling. It was your calling for the time, but I don't think it was your calling.
Yeah.
And with Hutch, you know, he fostered a lot of that with me. You know, he put the camera in my hand for the first time. He took me out and showed me the ropes with like the business side of things where I could have maybe gotten that experience in school, but I don't think I would have gotten the same like real experience that I got in 3 years with him. Let's say 2015 to 2018, 2019, sure. where I'll even say 2015 to 2017, because that's when I started Tiles by Law.
Sure.
In that short amount of time, he basically took me under his wing and I learned social media marketing. I learned event coordination. I learned, you know, PR management. I learned how to like run a booth. I learned how to, you know, put together a show and meet artists and like all these little things that, you know, you can kind of learn in school, but the experience is something that I would never trade. Cause I don't think I would get that same, if I did it in school and then try to come out and like do it now, I don't think it would like be a one-to-one.
Yeah, you know, I think that there is, you know, there is very much something to be said for hands-on learning, especially in like the field, like of like anything like photography, like really art, creating. The idea of creating and being a creator, being an artist, you know, sure, you know, I can sit down, you know, my little brother's doing this. My little brother is at university. He is going to be a senior. I dropped out. I'm a two-time college dropout who's going back to school. I'm going to be a sophomore this coming semester.
Right.
And my brother, though, he's 3 years younger than me, but he's a senior because he never stopped. He went in, he stuck with his major, and he's going to get out soon. But his major is film. And, you know, I can see his eye has gotten sharper, you know, his analytical understanding of art has gotten better. But, you know, the reason that that's happening is because he's, you know, it's less about like sitting down and like learning this is what you can do in this situation. This kind of shot is called this. Like, no, it's because he's making things.
Yeah.
You know, we both, one of his friends, who is, you know him in my chat on my live stream, the Mr. Mikey.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mr. Mikey has the world record, the Guinness official world record for the highest blood sugar ever survived.
I remember I think that might have been the stream that I was either half asleep for or smoking, but I remember catching this and going, what?
Yeah. Like, so here's the thing is the biggest project my brother's made recently, he made a little mini docu, like kind of just a little mini info kind of thing. It's like eight or nine minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little interview with Mike. And an organization that, honestly, it's not a bad thing to promote on the podcast. It's called Michael's Miracles. It's a nonprofit organization for families whose kids are diagnosed with diabetes and how to handle that, how to help for families that don't have the information or need help getting the information on how to help their kids when their kids get diagnosed with diabetes. That's what Michael's Miracles is, you know, and it's because of the experience that Mike had that got him the world record. But you know, it's like my brother shoots this little documentary and they're just talking about it, and they're talking about insulin prices, and they're talking about, you know, how hard it is for, you know, families to be able to afford insulin for their own kids. How he's like scared, 'cause he's like, yeah, when I'm 26 and I'm off my family's insurance, what am I going to do? I'm a liability. Like, do you know how expensive health insurance is going to be for, you know? But that's the thing is my brother makes this beautiful, and like, there's not a lot of like crazy cinematography in it, you know? It's just, a lot of it is just like kind of these shots of Mike talking to my brother. But the thing is like the intro and the outro of everything is like these shots just showcasing where he lives and the kind of situation that he lives in without words. It's just these beautiful shots of like a little suburban home in New Jersey. And it's just, you know, you get like some wind chimes and you can hear the wind chimes and stuff, you know, and it's just like through these shots, like I can see, you know, I'm just using him as an example. And we're talking about this mentor thing to get back around to the point. But, you know, I can see in him how these, you know, how going to school and stuff has really given him a better understanding of stuff on a different level. But I do agree with you that, you know, the thing that really makes it is the experience of making it, you know?
Yeah.
The reason that the school for him is working is because it's giving him the opportunity to make more.
Right.
You know, if you're, you know, you really can. You can get the same kind of understanding, and even honestly like a more unique style, I'd say, because you're not being like comparing your stuff to other work.
Yeah.
But you can get this like unique style and unique form of expression by just doing things of your own volition. You know, I think that some of, like I started writing poetry without, it's like, I started writing poetry, I think because, I really liked George Watsky. If you know Watsky, the rapper, he's this kid from San Francisco. He's just this, you know, he's just this white dude from San Francisco who just was rapping. He got famous off of a video on YouTube called Pale Kid Raps Fast. And he took like a 90s rap beat and just did like,
I think I know who you're talking about.
But anyway, that's how he like, he went viral at first. But then, you know, now he's made some albums and he's put some stuff out. And he, on this one album of his, Cardboard Castles, there's a poem and it's called Tiny Glowing Screens Part 2. Because before he was rapping, he was a slam poet. And Tiny Glowing Screens Part 2, I heard it and I was like, you know, like, I loved that. Like, what if I tried to do anything like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I never like made anything seriously for it. I would just, you know, at that point, I was still just writing things for like the poetry unit in a high school classroom, or that poem was the reason that I took a creative writing class when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. But and then, you know, like what made me want to actually publish any of the stuff that I've made was hearing Neil Hilborn's album with Button Poetry. And I was like, you know, maybe I could actually put some of the stuff that I've been writing, because at that point now I'm out of high school and I'm like, you know, I could start really like looking at this stuff and like seeing, you know, maybe there's something here for me. You know, I started going to open mics and I started reading my poetry. And that's the thing though, is that like, it's not like I'm classically trained and that like I can, you know, now that I'm in back in school, like, yeah, I can talk to you about like Emily Dickinson. I can talk to you about a bunch of different, poets of like, you know, people who've talked about like, gender inequality, you know, racial tension in the country, and like all of these beautiful pieces that like from American history, you know, and like now I can talk to you about all of that, but that's never influenced what I'm doing. You know, like, sure, it's influenced it in like some sense, like, you know, there's definitely like, I hear myself in my recordings and I'm like, oh, that's definitely like Neil Hilborn coming out in me a little bit. But that's not because like I learned about these poets. It's because I heard them and I liked them. And I'm like, I have something similar to say, or I have, you know, I can hear myself speaking at that cadence, you know? And so that's the thing, is like, I'm not a classically trained poet. I'm not like going to school for poetry. I'm just writing more. And as I'm writing more, I think
you're actually going to school for film, no?
I'm not going for film. My brother's going for film. I want to be an English teacher. I realized,
interesting.
I realized when I was
in your video, I saw you with the camera and I was like, filmmaker.
I am through and through a filmmaker. I have yet to show you it. I haven't made a film. Well, I made the visual art for, poems off of both of my albums. You know, cause I've already told you about it, but I've already put out, I Wasn't Built to Exist, but that's the first half. The second half is called But I Have to Live. And the podcast will probably be out after it's out. But, you know, it's two albums of poetry to showcase the darker side of my experiences and my growing up.
Yeah.
And then to show the lighter side of it, you know, to show I've made it through everything I've experienced and I'm here to tell you about it, you know? And so the last things that I made with one of my best friends, my buddy Luke, and I got went to my dad's house. My parents are divorced, so I'm at my dad's house. We tore apart my room, made it as messy as it could be for one of the poems off of I Wasn't Built to Exist, called Growing Part 3. And then what I did was as soon as we were done and I knew we had all the footage that we needed, I cleaned the entire thing to show, you know, the juxtaposition I think that's the right word for that. I'm an English major. I should know this. to show the, you know, to show that I'm getting healthier, for growing part four. You know, so those are the last things that like I've made directly. You know, and like all the visual arts were like shots that either I or Luke, had shot over the course of like years, actually, for my old stuff. Cause I have another album that's already out. It's been out since 2017. I made two visual arts for the first two parts of Growing. And they're just things that I shot, you know, but, it's been really nice. Cause like being a filmmaker, and like having, like finding that inspiration and like finding the reason to like make something new is always a really good feeling. But, no, you know, I studied film in high school is what it was. I was lucky enough that we had, different electives. Like we had options for classes that we could take, in addition to just, you know, the standard stuff to get out of high school.
Right.
And one of them was media communications. Media communications is just filmmaking. That's what it was. It was, it was, you know, you learn how to be, you learn how different functional stuff in our studio. We had like a news team, was, BRTV was our news team. And so you could learn how like all the different things in the studio work, how to edit for green screen stuff, how to, you know, white balance a camera and, oh, here you're going to make a project about this. And you'd take like a week and have like two or three of your classmates and you'd make a film for class, you know, but, media communications, like there were different levels of it. There were five levels of it. They were each half year courses. So yeah, over the course of like, from my sophomore year to my senior year, I took every single one. And at the end of it, I'll show you at some point, I made the, it's honestly, it's one of the reasons I haven't made another short film, is because I felt like I did it for a little while. Like I made a film.
You didn't have anything else left to say at that
point. Yeah. Like that's what it was. It really was. It was like this moment of like, I've said what I need to say here, you know? And it's called Vibrance. I use music from, I know this guy, he's actually pretty big. I didn't know how big he was until like I checked like a week or two ago. He's got like millions of listeners and stuff on Spotify now. But he just makes lo-fi stuff. He's Weird Inside. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I might have, because I listen to a lot of lo-fi stuff. So I might have.
Yeah, his latest thing was, it's called Just Ask, I think was his latest track. But okay. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's put out more. I hope not. Sorry, Ani. I used some of his music off of his first album, like before anyone, you know, before anyone was like listening to him, you know, like he was just, hey, I just made an album for fun and I put it on Spotify. And I was like, hey, can I use this for my short film? And he was like, sure. But what I did was I told a story. I made a character named Dave, who was just a reflection of me. And it was based off of the feature length film It's Such a Beautiful Day by Don Hertzfeldt. The cinematography style and everything is based around that movie, which that's an animation, but all it is like the entire screen is black except for like these little bubbles where it's focusing on the main character of that movie is Bill. And then the different things that like the narrator is talking about, because it's not, there's no dialogue. It's just narration. And so little bubbles will show up about the little things that the narrator's talking about as the scene progresses. Okay. And so that's how I did it for Vibrance. I did it just live action, you know, so it was shots of me in class. I think in part of it, one of my friends punches me in the face. It's really funny. But
I mean, but so with all that, you, because we went from mentorship and basically the experience part, like like I remember when I was doing my first lifeguard class, my instructor told me, I know you know what the book is telling you, but I need you to understand why we're applying what we're applying. And I think like those kind of experiences are why, like when I learn now, classrooms don't really do it for me. Like you, yes. I'm a multiple college dropout, three times up, three times down. it's not a competition, but I'm winning.
You know, I'll drop out right now, dog. I will
Don't you dare. Not on my account, please. I don't need that on my conscience. but you know, like the best experiences are sometimes just that. It's just experience. And I think because of my experience with Hutch and my experience over the course of the last 7 years now,
sure,
give or take, you know, it's been a process where, you know, I went from, yeah, like if you would have sat me down with the 24-year-old version of myself and said, hey, you're going to put out your first book, you're going to be a content creator, you're going to be affiliate on Twitch, you're going to do X, Y, and Z, you're a photographer and videographer and all this other stuff, I would have looked at you like you had 16 heads. Because I guarantee at 24, I was looking at moving to Australia and becoming a swim coach and getting all these certifications for swim. Like I had all these sort of certifications for swimming. And that's where I thought my life was. And then I got bumped into this world of comics and what have you by just circumstance of like,
yeah,
I went through a really rough 2014 and 2015. My friends were like, yo, come to cons, come do this, this and a third. And then I met Hutch and then the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. And dude, like it's interesting, you know, because life does like, it throws curveballs at us all the time, you know? I went from just like a small, small in terms of like referential, but like probably the biggest thing in my life. I went from being like I was really closed-minded person when I was in high school. And I said, you know, I was like, I'm never going to do drugs. I'm never going to, you know, smoke weed or drink or anything. And my senior year, I was like, you know what, man, I feel like I've been missing out. I'll try smoking weed. It's like the second half of senior year. I'm like, I'll try it. The rest of that year went down the fucking toilet. I'm really like, thank God I had the sense of mind to graduate at the end of it. But I spent the next, I was sober for a year, but I spent all of 17 and 18 very, very messed up. I was sober for 19 and then I spent 20 to 21 very, very messed up. I had absolutely no direction. At that point I didn't know, and I talk about it on my albums, but for a long time I haven't known what growing up would even be conceivably.
Right.
And then, you know, it's just like I had some experience. I had some very spiritual, what I think of as like very divine intervention kind of experience that led me to being sober. And I've been sober for almost 3 years. You know, it's gonna be three years in May. Yeah, you know, and that's
congratulations. That's amazing.
But that's the deal, is like I stumbled into meeting some of the wrong people. I'm still like they're most of them are very supportive of me, who like I partied with. Most of them are very supportive of me and most of them check up on me. And you know, they're still my friends. So I'm not gonna say that they're the wrong people, but it was the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, and I stumbled into that. But then I stumbled back out of it and now I'm back out of it. And it's like, no, hold on. You're building a future. When did you start doing that? What does that even mean? You know? And it's like, dude, there's, you know, I'm at college and I'm saying like the plan right now is to do English. The plan right now is to do an English degree with a sub plan in creative writing. I'm actually doing a minor in African-American studies, so that I can do a fifth year, which is going to be the education certification. I want to teach high school English, you know, and I'm doing the African-American studies minor because of all the messed up stuff that's going on in our country. And I feel like it's an important thing that, especially at the high school level, to be able to talk about.
Right.
But you know, it's like, the reality is like, I could get like halfway through this and be like, I don't know, dude, all of a sudden journalism's really cool. Or I don't know, dude, like going and getting a master's and being like a research, like a professor doing research around the world on different topics and shit. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to keep myself open to all the different paths because like, dude, all it's been so far is life kind of nudging me in different directions. So it's like, why would I stop that? You know? But like, hey, it's
you
crazy.
You said something that resonated with me where you said, I didn't really have a plan. So when I got here, it was kind of like, oh shit, it's kind of happening right now, yeah. You know? And I've been there like a lot, like especially this past few years,
yeah,
where it felt like, just honestly, where I was just like, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I don't have a plan for the future. I'm trying to survive right now. Mm-hmm. You know? What was that like moment where you were like, oh shit, like I'm actually starting to make a plan. I'm actually starting to go from like not really having the energy to do anything other than exist and like, you know, make it through and survive to, oh shit, like I'm actually productively moving my feet in a direction.
COVID changed a lot of our lives.
Absolutely.
You know, and January of 2020, I was sober. I had been sober. I got sober in May of 2019. And I'm sitting there and I'm starting to freak out like, okay, well, what do I do now? Like, I have to do something, right? Because I'm not just going to waste away and die like I thought I was going to. I didn't think I was going to make it to 23. I had a plan that involved me being gone before I was 23. And now I get sober and I'm like, well, fuck, what am I going to do? And everyone in my program, you know, I'm in the Alcoholics Anonymous program that I'm a part of, said, don't do that. I'm like, what do you mean don't do that? They're like, don't freak out about the future. I'm like, why? They're like, because you're new. You're going to have to take this one day at a time. You're going to have to learn how to just make it through a day without drinking and make it through a day without doing drugs, so that then you can learn how to make it through a week without doing them. And then you can learn how to make it through a month without doing them. And, you know, no matter how long you're sober, you're still going to have to be able to do this day by day. And so that's what the plan was for a long time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's January 2020. Now I'd been sober for all the rest of that year. I had been sober. This is like going on what, like 8 or 9 months?
Ballpark. Yeah.
Ballpark. Yeah. I can't count really. So whatever.
who needs math?
I'm an English major. I don't need it.
Exactly.
I meet this girl, you know, and I had already dated a girl. Like I'd been through the relationship. You think you're going to marry her and then it falls apart. You know, I did that when I was 19, that was my sober year of 19 was with a girl that I did. I thought it was going to be the rest of my life. And so when that had ended, you know, I was avoiding a lot of the issues I had from that relationship, not like because of her, but just like because I wasn't as much of an adult as I thought I was at that point. Okay. Like, I'm like, okay, the plan at that point was become a manager at like some Burger King and, you know, work my way up like some kind of corporate ladder so that I can support a family and raise my kids so that they can do better, like have kids and have them do better than me. Because I already fucked up. That was my thought. And I'm like 19 at this point. Like, what the fuck do you mean?
You're already like hanging up the towel at this point.
I really was. And so, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of that. And I'm realizing that I'm dealing with a lot of that in my sobriety. And I meet this girl. I'm not going to name drop her. But we entered this weird... We were like, I look back at it and I'm like, that was a girlfriend of mine. But we never said we were a quote unquote officially dating.
Right.
We were just, you know, messing around a lot for her.
A long span of time.
6 months of seeing each other every single day. The L word got dropped on both of our parts. You know, both of us had at separate times, like, said it without prompting or anything, you know. So needless to say, you know, I fell for this girl really hard. She slept with her ex-boyfriend 6 months in. I tried to forgive her. I said, look, if we can like make this like a real thing and like actually like be committed and like make this like you and I together, like against the world kind of thing, then I'll look past it. But like, I need, you know, if we want to keep doing this, like I need you to do this.
Right.
He was like, I don't know, maybe we got to talk. I have to think about it. And I was like, okay. Like a few days later, she says, no, I can't do this. And I'm sitting there and I got mad. I was sad. I was sad for a while. Both of these like the biggest relationships in my life. What happened was, I went to my dad's house because my dad lives a couple towns away. And so it's just far enough away from like everyone, like I know, and like all my life that, you know, but like I'm close enough that I can still go to work and I can still see some of my friends and stuff, but it's far enough away that like, it's not it, like everywhere that I drive is not her, you know?
Yeah.
And so with the first relationship, this girl I thought I was going to marry, I was there for like 2 months with her, with this relationship from 2020. I was there for like 10 days and I had made friends with some of her friends and so her friends were mad at her. So one of them comes up and is like, I was like, you know what? I just really need to talk about this. So she stops by my place and I said to her, I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done being all sad about it. I'm done being all whatever, like, oh, I'm so sad because someone couldn't love me the way I love them. I was like, you know what? I'm fucking fuck this. I'm done. Yeah. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fucking leave. And she was like, what do you mean leave? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go make a fucking life because this is fucking ridiculous. I've been sober at that point. I'm like, now I've been sober for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, yeah, I've learned how to be who I am. And really I'm still learning how to be who I am every day. But at that point I was like, you know, I'm done.
You knew enough to know that that wasn't what you wanted or needed.
Yeah. You know? And I'm like, you know, because of COVID, I lost my job, you know?
Yeah.
And so like now, like, what am I going to do? Sit around my house every day and be fucking sad about a girl who obviously like, you know, fucking turns out to not be worth my time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like fucking, I feel bad. Like I'm trying to say things without completely being a tool about them. It's like, you know, like the reality is like, it just, you know, like she's not like evil. She just, it just didn't work out. That's really what it is. You know, she's not like evil or anything, but you know, it's just like, yeah, it hurt me. So of course I'm a little vindictive, even though it's been more than a year now, but, you know, that's on me. Regardless, I decided, I was like, I gotta get out of here. What am I going to do? And I go to my dad and I said, Dad, I'm going back to college. And he says, good. He goes, call your uncle and ask him what to do, because he just got done putting my cousins through college. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's kind of the finance guy for the family, you know? Okay. So he's like, he's going to help you come up with the actual plan of what you're going to do. And I call him and he says, Ryan, he goes, the reason that you dropped out of college twice is because you stayed home and you're a drug addict. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, this is what I'm saying. You didn't want to do your college work. You didn't want to do anything because you were too busy going off and doing fucking drugs and doing all this other stupid shit that you know, wanted to do. So what you're going to do is you're going to leave. You're going to go out of state, he goes, you know, and I know you're good at writing, you know, at that point I had tried to write a book. It did not get published. I don't think I'm going to publish it. It's too, a lot of the poetry in it is like too naive. I'm going to wait a little bit longer until I have some stuff I'm more proud of to, finish it. But,
okay. Now I'm very curious. I gotta see if I can get a sneak peek of that one.
I'll tell you here. You want the title poem? The book is called, Passerby. And the main poem. This is the fucking intellectual property of Ryan Van Lanningham, whoever the fuck is listening to this. I swear to God.
I'm so glad I didn't take a sip just now because I would have spit all over my laptop.
That's hilarious. But the poem is called Passerby. The title poem. The day I stop seeing your face in windows of opposing cars, I will be free.
Fuck me.
Yeah, that is the best poem I've ever written. That's the single greatest thing I've ever written. It's the poem that's going to make the title of my book. But
how old were you when you wrote it?
I was 20.
Damn.
That was, like I said, I spent 19 sober. It was with a girl I thought I was going to marry when we broke up. She got a new car and I had seen her driving her new car once. And so every time on the road I ever saw a silver Nissan, I saw her face. And it did not leave me. I could not escape it for a long time. And eventually I was just driving one day, and I think I said that out loud to myself out on my way to work. And I just parked and I made myself late for work because I pulled out my phone and wrote in it and like looked at it and then like adjusted the wording slightly and then looked at it and then adjusted the wording slightly and then made the line breaks different and then looked at it. And like sat back and just like looked out my window
really
for like a full couple
though.
Minutes. Yeah, I love it.
Like, so that's also the kind of thing you write after like a major life perspective change. Like, you couldn't write that at 12 or some shit because you don't have that kind of heartache and pain and the story that goes behind like those words.
When I showed that to that same uncle who was giving me this college advice, and he said, that's a very interesting take on the philosophy of freedom. And I thought about it and I looked at it and then I started comparing it to my other poetry. I'm like, no, this is just the greatest thing I've ever written, dude. That moment we were talking about, this is what I do, by the way. I'm so sorry, I go off on tangents that aren't related a lot
of
times.
All right, after this is done, you're gonna go back and I'm gonna like send you an episode to listen to. Uh-huh. I guarantee every episode I've had has been tangent, and then eventually it's me like, and mind you, I like I said, we both have ADHD. It's me going, how did we get from A to B?
Yeah.
All right. So I have to go do the mental gymnastics to try to pull back and bring back the conversation, or I just kind of let it ride because there's times where I'm like, it'll be fine.
Yeah. That's fair. But you said like, you know, like that is a moment where my life changed. Because I realized that I had to shift my perspective on this girl. Which honestly, also this girl that poem's about, she is the only ex of mine that we're like friends now. Like me and her are tight as fuck. She's great. I love her, dude. She's awesome. But it's like, and we're just like chill, like just being friends. It's really cool, actually. You know what I mean?
The immortal words of my best friend, Dennis, this life shit is crazy.
Yeah, this life shit is crazy. That is the true words, man. I don't know if you've ever been spoken. But going back to the moment that like I realized, like I said, like it was, I need to go to college. I call my uncle and he says, you need to go. He's like, you know, he's like, I've read the stuff that you were trying to put in this book. You know, you sent it to me. You've shown me some of the stuff that you're writing now. And I really do. I think you have a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. So you got to go do an English degree, do something to do with literature, and get out of New Jersey, go to somewhere. He said this verbatim, go to somewhere. I don't know. Find some liberal arts college in the middle of nowhere. I don't know, Minnesota. And now I'm enrolled in the University of Minnesota.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, anywhere, fuck it. Minnesota. Just, it's kind of like just that idea of throwing a dart on a map and just being like, wherever it lands, I'm just going to go. Wherever it
fucking. Yeah, exactly.
I like it.
I love shit like that, like where the universe, like, but that's what I'm talking about too. Like we were saying, life pushes you in different, like that's all it was. It pushed me that way. And I said, okay, cool. I looked up Liberal Arts College, Minnesota. I found the school I'm going to. I applied. It was the only one that like I had finished the full application process for, because you know, it takes some of these colleges, like they take a few like days to really fill everything out and then they get back to you. And then you need to fill out more stuff. So like, I'm in the process of like applying to like two or three others when I get the call back and they're like, yeah, by the way, if you just fill this out, like we're ready to accept you. Oh, I'm like, shit. You're ready to what? And they're like, yeah, do you have, do you think you could get like a reference letter from like a teacher or like a boss or something, like a recommendation letter, and then fill out like just a quick college essay? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And like, I'm like, and you're ready to accept me? They're like, yeah, you seem like the kind of student that we want. And I'm sitting here like, I graduated high school with a fucking 2.2. What do you mean I'm what you want? You know, like
what, life experience.
That
time between like leaving the second time around, or mm-hmm. leaving the first time around rather, and mm-hmm. then going back, and then now like doing it again, you're this is take three for you.
Yeah.
Like that experience speaks volumes going back to school. And I didn't quite grasp that. And so I went back, because I went from high school straight to college. Did the three semesters at a community college. I was like,
yeah,
right in the area. I do not remember my third semester at all. Like it's a complete and utter blur to me.
Yeah.
Did spring semester of my sophomore year at the school that I was hanging out with all my friends. My sister went there with the cases, took one class. It was like an English course or whatever. And I remember I was applying for the Poetry Conservatory. I was like, cool. Submitted it like a week late. They liked what I had, but I submitted it a week late. And I was like, all right, fine, whatever the case is. It was like only 35 spots, but I could try again like next year. And I was like, I don't really feel like waiting. Like, I think part of it, I didn't want to be there in the conservatory, but I mm-hmm. felt like I needed to be in the conservatory because that justifies my desire to be a writer. Like if I was in this conservatory, then, you know, people would look at me a certain way and I would have a certain accreditation and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then I left, I took a hiatus and I was like, I want to do it from high school. I was like, I want to just take some time off. Like, I just want to take some time off from school because I've done nothing but school and school wasn't really for me. I now know at 30, going on 34, that it was mostly ADHD and whatnot, but, you know, school wasn't really for me. So I took a break and my mom was like, well, you're not going to just stay home doing nothing. You're going to work. So I got my certifications in swimming and that's how I like built out my swim career.
Yeah. I've heard that exact, well, you're not going to do nothing.
It's like, oh yeah, absolutely.
Mom, let me do nothing.
I just want to like backpack Europe. Nah, you're just going to work. I'm like, cool, 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 cool. Got it.
Cool. Got it.
So I did, you know, I did like at that point, I did 7 years between my last stint of college to my next stint, my third and last stint of college. And I remember like the application process and like getting there and whatnot. And they even had like a, I don't even know if it was a course or it was something, but they take a chunk of credits and hold them for you for what's called like life experience. Because I've been out of school for so long, because I've worked in my own fields. Like I was going to school for rec education and I was in the world doing swim instruction. So I was like, I'm in similar fields. I'm doing the thing that, and they were like, yeah, there's a, you know, it's basically not a full course. Like it's not like a show up to class and like take notes, whatever the case is. It's, you kind of give like a presentation, a dissertation on like what you've been up to for the last, however long you've been out of school for. Sure. And based on that, they assign you a certain amount of credits. Wow. And I was like, oh shit, that's pretty dope. I never got to that portion because I think it was supposed to happen my next semester afterwards. But I thought that was like really cool. But they did take a lot of that into consideration. And I was like, oh shit, that's really dope. Lo and behold, three semesters later, I just left because bunch of life stuff was happening, and it got to the point where ultimately I had so much on my plate and school wasn't the priority.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew that. I was like, you know, I had a bunch of stuff going on with the studio. I just started with the studio. I was still working full time as a swim instructor. I was trying to, you know, pay rent and bills and all this other stuff. I was doing a bunch of stuff in, like, you know, certain scenes and, you know, promoting, and it was a whole bunch of shit that I was doing. And while I wanted school to be my priority, it just never really felt like it, because yeah. I was in school to get a piece of paper to tell me that I can do what I'm already in the field for doing.
Yeah.
Essentially, like, you know, it would just be like, hey, I have a degree, a really expensive piece of paper that says I have a degree that tells me I can do what I'm already in the field and doing.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I think that realization combined with just that, like, knowing that, like, I was not taking it as seriously because it felt like a back burner thing. There were so many. I remember I became the president of a club on campus. I never even stepped foot into that club.
Really?
They just nominated me. And I was like, huh? And I remember they wanted me to, like, do internships and do travel things and plan events and all this other stuff. And I was like, guys, you realize I have, like, years on you guys. I'm 26 at this point. Mm-hmm. You guys are fresh 17, 18, 19 in like coming out of high school and stuff.
Yeah.
I can't be the guy that you guys want me to be.
And there's something to be said for that with me. I mean, most of my experience being, like, a non-traditional student has just been getting really angry when people ask me who Nirvana is.
Oh my God.
You know, and it's like, or being like, oh yeah, I've heard of them. Isn't that Kurt Cobain guy? And I'm like, yes.
Can we not?
Ooh, but no, you know, and like, I get that. Like, I'm in a slightly different position in the same kind of thing though. I made it. I did an audition and I made it. I'm on my school's improv troupe.
Nice.
We're just called the sports team. I don't know why it's such a shitty name, but we're just sports team. It's with a Z.
What is there? Does your school have a sports team? Because that would make it even better.
We are we're not even, what division even are we? I don't even
division
know.
Division three.
Something. It's okay. We're the Morris Cougars, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
But you know, I'm sorry to any of my college friends who watch. I don't give much of a shit about football.
I don't really like
I used to play baseball. Like, when I was a kid, I won like 3 rec league championships over the course of playing baseball, but like I just don't care about sports, man. Like, I like hockey. I'll watch hockey. I'm a Penguins fan. I'll watch hockey, but you know, I don't really keep up. But yeah, no, we're just, the improv troupe is just sports team, and I have plans, man, because most of those people that are on the team are one of them's a senior who's graduating after the semester. Two of them are juniors. One of them is a sophomore, and I have, other than the captain of our team, has the most improv experience out of all of us. But like, I did improv when I was in high school. You know, I have quite a few years of improv experience under my belt, and I'm like, I'm taking over this team. When you're gone, it's my team. And like, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm going to be like, yo, all you little freshman motherfuckers, like, get ready. We're doing improv my way.
It's about to be a whole wild ride.
I'm about to be 26 and I'm going to be in charge of a bunch of 18 year olds, and I'm going to revel in it.
Let's do it. I'm here for it. So, all right. I want to go back to, I do want to get back to, like, you and Star, because I think that your friendship, you guys have a Discord server, which I think is fascinating to me. Yeah. Like,
it was mine, but then as Star started, like, streaming more and more often, I was like, well, you know, instead of, like, making your whole own thing, like, you're already here, and like, everyone who watches you, we just redirect to here. So let's just make it your server too.
Nice.
You know, and that's very recent, honestly. But I keep trying to tell her, like, I keep trying to encourage her to, like, you know, like, no, like, take rein. Like, what do you want to do something? Like, we'll do that. You know, it's yours now, too. It's not just like it's been mine for the past year or year and a half or however long. It may about a year. It's like it's been mine for about like the year that I've been running it. Mm. But like, no, dude, like. It's yours now too. So, you know, but, yeah, no, Star and I met playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which is weird to say because that community is the worst community. They're almost as bad as the League of Legends community.
I was going to say, is it that bad? Like, is League of Legends not bad?
It's not quite League of Legends bad,
but it's dangerously borderline
like,
close.
You'll just regularly get into games where people are using the voice chat to either spam really poorly, you know, really like bad quality music, or shout, you know, offensive like slurs at the top of their lungs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when you tell them to stop, they start calling you all the slurs that they're saying, you know, and it's like, it's not a good place to be honest.
Right.
But I met this girl, she's still a friend of mine. My friend Amber, and I met playing a game of CS, and she invited me to her server mm-hmm. that she shared with a friend, with her friend Meg. And Meg and Amber, they just had this server and it was just people that they've played games with. And they're just mm-hmm. like, hey, like this is like a little hub for like people that we have, you know, gamed with or like have done what X, Y, and Z with, and we'll play games again, you know? And we got in like a little like group of us. There was like the two of them, myself, maybe like one or two other people, and then Star. And Star had met them the same way. And so now, okay, well, we're in the server because we all play CS, so we'll play CS together. And it's like, oh, okay, Star's pretty good. We get to know each other a little bit, you know, just like late night talking and hanging out like with a bunch of people and everything. And then, but Star and I weren't really that close. What happened was I started streaming at the end of 2020 and Among Us got really popular. So I was like, okay, well, I'll start streaming Among Us with my friends. Mm. And Star hits me up and she's like, hey, it says on your, you know, your Discord status that you were streaming Among Us. And I was like, yeah, dude, like do you want to like play sometime? And she's like, yeah. I was like, here's the stream link. Come watch for now. And then, you know, we'll get you into a lobby if we have room tonight. I send her a link to the Discord. She hops in. We just played a few games of Among Us. And the next thing I know, she's like a mainstay on the server. This is like someone I met, you know, upwards of about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We had really lost contact with each other for a good year or so.
Yeah.
And then just like kind of comes back around. And, you know, now we're having 3 a.m. talks. But now it's me, her, and like a couple of the people in my server. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's coming down. It's like it's just me and Star hanging out. You know, and
I got the impression you guys were like longtime buddies. Like everyone's like, yeah, they're the best friends, like siblings. Like,
yeah. Well, and that's the thing though, is that we really like, we are, she's one of my best friends. You know, mm. I've come to have a few people in that server that I would call some of my best friends. Mm. You know, and the best part is now too, I've met people who are into gaming and stuff from my college and now they're just part of my community on my server too. You know, and it's like, it's really cool. Cause like, my buddy, you've talked to him in stream, Isaac. Isaac's probably like arguably my best friend at college that I have, you know?
Okay.
Isaac and I hang out all the time. We, you know, same kind of thing as you though, is like we met, through actually, cause there's the improv troupe. There are two improv teams at my school and then there's the club, which is, you know, the people from the improv teams and then just people who want to casually do improv for fun can just come and like play improv games at the club. Mm-hmm. And Isaac's on the other team at the school. And so even before auditions happen, I meet Isaac and we're just at club. And then we do like a couple scenes together. We realize like we got the same kind of sense of humor. And then we exchange Snapchats and then like, 2 days later, we're like barring souls to each other about like the struggles of being at college like growing up, and how he's like, you know, because he's 22. And so he's graduating at the end of the semester too. And now he's like talking to me about like how he's like, you know, I'm going to have a degree. And so like, sure, I'm going to find a job in the field that I'm doing this all in. But like, you know, it's like real life. That's going to be weird, man. And I was like, well, dude, like I've been living real life. Let me talk to you about this, you know? And, you know, like all of a sudden, like a week later, we're showing up at improv and I just walk up to him and we're like doing like a bit together. And then I realize I look over and like, not everyone's looking at us, but there's like one or two people who are looking at us like, what the fuck's going on? I'm like, oh my God, it's been a week and I have inside jokes with this guy. What the fuck?
That's always like, great though.
And welcome back. I hope you guys enjoyed part one of Slam Story so far. We have part two on the way, coming out very soon, next week after this. Like I said, I hope you guys check out all the links. Slam is an incredible artist with many projects who I hope that I get to work with very soon, because it at this point I feel like it has to happen. My book, To the Boy That Grew Up, is available January 15th, 2022, which also happens to be my birthday. There will be a Twitch stream for my birthday and the book launch. Come check me out. twitch.tv/TowelsByLaw. The book will be available all over Amazon, and I'm just so grateful for all of you. If you guys would like to support me and support the show, I have a Patreon. There's links in the bio for that. And also there is a print shop where you can find not only the prints from the book, but a number of prints of photos that I've done over the course of many years, with more to come. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. And as always, follow your path. I'll catch you next time. Peace.